Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
That's the new TV.
Yeah.
It's social media.
Yeah.
So.
Well, again, you're able to put your content out the way you wanted. You can edit it the way you wanted.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. I got an editor now because I was tired of doing it.
There you go. You've really made it. Well, listen, it was lovely chatting to you.
Thank you.
And just to remind people, the Locked and Loaded tour, it's at Liberty Hall Theatre tonight in Dublin. Tickets are available from ticketmaster.ie. Does your mom go along to all the gigs or is she just here to shop?
She's a performer. She's a comedian.
What?
Yeah, my mom's a performer.
Wow, okay.
How many comedians bring their mama on the road?
Double trouble. What's her name, by the way?
Her name is Mama Lawson.
Mama Lawson.
Yeah.
Okay, fab. Listen, lovely chatting to you this afternoon. Good luck with the show tonight and with the rest of the tour. Preacher Lawson, thanks for coming in. That is all we've got time for today. Stay tuned because Cormac is next on Drive Time and I'll be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Watch quick Drive Time on today's programme. Russia denies destroying a key dam in Ukraine. We get the latest as whole towns and villages flee for their lives. Shock as a PGA Tour merges with a controversial Saudi-backed LIV Golf. Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin on the need for increased support for struggling mortgage holders. Aer Lingus data compromised in a global cyber hack. Prince Harry takes a stand in the Mirror phone hacking trial. And from Friends to Murder, She Wrote, why do you keep watching old TV programmes? Why indeed, you might let me know if you do, if you're one of the many to keep watching old TV programmes. What do you get out of it? What do you get out of it if you're one of those who sits in front of Murder, She Wrote again, or Seinfeld again, or Frasier again? You might let me know what you watch and why you do it to 51551. And my God, what a shocker that was. After all they've said about LIV Golf, the new controversial Saudi Arabia-backed LIV Golf Tour, which has dangled dollars in front of many a pro to join its ranks, has been criticised by really high-profile players like our own Rory McIlroy, who's described LIV Golf, of course, as a cloud over the sport at the moment. This is really when sport and politics and dubious human rights records collide. But I just wonder if the PGA Tour is... Well, I mean, where does that leave them? Are they after caving here, in your opinion? Where does that leave the likes of Rory McIlroy as well, who's pledged absolute support for PGA? You can let me know to 51551. We'll get the views of Greg Allen a little bit later on that one. But first, this afternoon, Aer Lingus, they've confirmed that approximately 5,000 of its staff have been affected by a cyber hack. The attack has also seen other large corporations, including Boots and British Airways, being targeted. And some of the data taken in this one includes employee names and dates of birth and email addresses, and in most cases, PPS numbers as well. For more on this, we're joined by Paul C. Dwyer, who's CEO of Team Cyber. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Cormac.
Who's responsible here, do you think?
It's more than likely we're all roads lead back to Moscow on this. I mean, we've seen Vladimir Putin has blessed, orchestrated, and indeed supported a lot of attacks. Some of these attacks by groups like, for example, Klopp, which we see as the group that's behind this, have made huge revenues. I mean, Klopp as a group have made 500 million so far, at least. But there's a geopolitical aspect to these attacks.
And we'll deal with that in just a second. But in terms of the data that's been taken, how sure can they be that no other information, apart from the list that I've named there, names and dates of birth and email addresses and PPS numbers, and which is bad enough, Paul, as well. But what about phone numbers and bank details and all of that other stuff? How sure can they be that that hasn't been compromised?
Well, at this stage of the investigation, they will be trying to ascertain and validate exactly what has been taken. So what we know is definitely the details that have been taken so far, but they will be investigating to find out has further details been taken. And this methodology they use will go step by step to validate what they're looking for is essentially what we call IOCs, indicators of compromise, to find out where the bad guys have been on the system.
So there could well be people who've been compromised here listening to us. What should they do, Paul?
Well, look, we all have to be wary these days, whether it's a recent attack in the media or whether it's just ongoing. We have to be cyber savvy, if you like, in relation to dubious emails, phone calls from unknown numbers, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, they're the times we live in. But we all have to play a part in securing systems. It's not just down to one particular provider. We all have to make sure we're carrying out the basics of cyber hygiene, if you like, you know, updating our phones, being conscious of what we click on, and just taking care, really. We all have a part to play in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's for us. But you kind of expect that big corporations, big companies have their security in order here. And a lot of them do, but still it's pierced. And that's the problem. The hack here was via a piece of software called MoveIt Transfer. What do you know about it, and how could it easily have been hacked?
Well, it not necessarily that it would be easily hacked, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing on this earth that is 100% secure or unhackable. And you're up against very well-funded, very sophisticated and complex threat actors who work with military precision and are often working alongside military groups to carry out these attacks. So in many ways, it's not just a criminal fraternity trying to hack into something. It's a military mission to hack into these systems. As I say, there's a geopolitical aspect of it, because there's about embarrassing big American companies and large corporations as well, and effectively countries as well, as well as the gains they get from stealing from data. And we often refer to it as data as the new cash, because the rogue cyber criminals, if you like, they will try and monetize that data. They will use it as part of other scams. And you're right to allude to that in relation to things like PPS numbers and sensitive information, because that's the kind of bread and butter of the ordinary cyber criminal, who will use that as part of other scams, trying to get people to trust them and to carry out, you know, a particular scam on them.
Is it unusual, Paul, for a number of big corporations or companies like Boots or British Airways and Aer Lingus to be hacked at the same time? Or is it simply down to this piece of software that they all seem to use?
This is about supplier dependency. And, you know, when there's major providers out there supplying for large corporate groups, they have a massive impact when somebody hacks that. And that's why we've seen some excellent policy changes and strategies coming in from the EU in relation to this, especially around the financial service sector, because they're particularly complex and made up of small and large enterprises. So we have, for example, the DORA, Digital Operation Resilience Act, coming out, which is coming into law in the next 2 years, which effectively takes care or looks at those risks across the supply chain in the financial sector itself. So it's not unusual. Mm-hmm. And it's the everyday tactics and modus operandi of the bad guys is to try and get through sometimes small companies, work their way up into bigger suppliers, going upstream and downstream in a supply chain to affect as many as they can with as little effort as possible.
Well, it's not unusual, but the cost of it is enormous, as we've seen. We spoke to you, Paul, about the HSE hack as well, and the damage it caused and the distress it caused to an awful lot of ordinary people as well. Paul C. Dwyer, CEO of Team Cyber, thank you very much indeed for sharing your expertise on this one. If you fear that you've been affected, you can let me know too. What advice you've received, if any, at this stage to 51551. You've been texting our program already about the repeats of TV programs. I'm 12 years old. I didn't expect this, now I must say. I'm 12 years old, says one listener, and I just love to watch Frasier over and over again. I find the humour in it very funny. It's a very good show, in my opinion. And maybe that's the idea of harnessing another group of listeners and viewers again. Thank you very much indeed for that text. The Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry to you and me. Well, maybe not Prince Harry to you and me, but anyway, Prince Harry to an awful lot of people, has been giving evidence at the High Court today in the case against the Mirror Group newspapers. He claims that his phone was systematically hacked and that he was subject to media intrusion and unlawful news gathering techniques for more than 15 years. He alleges that about 140 articles published between 1996 and 2010 contained information using unlawful methods, and 33 of these have been selected to be considered at this very trial. We're joined now by Gareth Davies, who's acting editor of the Telegraph .co.uk newspaper, who's been following today's proceedings. Good afternoon to you, Gareth.
Afternoon, how are you doing?
He looked pretty cool today, didn't he, Prince Harry?
He did, yeah. I mean, he arrived about half nine, which is pretty standard for sort of high profile people within the court system to arrive at trial and at court cases that begin at 10. So yeah, he arrived and he was ushered in, went through security like everybody else, and then yeah, he's been in the dock. In the witness box since about 10 o'clock this morning. Mm-hmm. you know, he's displayed certain elements of nervousness, I guess, sort of playing with his suit and taking those the little sips of water and licking his lips as his mouth gets dry, as all of us do those little ticks when we do get nervous. But he's been put through the ringer.
He has indeed. I'm glad you corrected yourself that he wasn't in the dock there, Gareth.
I don't want
to be involved in a case with you and Prince Harry in the High Court in the UK. Come here to me. What have they focused on? What articles have they focused on?
So a range, really. I mean, they cover his relationship with his family and his ex-girlfriend Chelsea Davy, a few injuries and illnesses, you know, a broken thumb came up, his military service, and basically, there's been a back and forth today with Andrew Green, King's Counsel, spending most of the day putting it to Prince Harry that Prince Harry claims the Mirror obtained these stories unlawfully, either by hacking or by other means. But Mr. Green, KC, says that
he represents the Mirror Group, isn't that right?
He says that most of these were in the public domain anyway, with many of them coming from the Press Association or PA as they're known, or follows from other newspapers. Now, for listeners who might not be aware, the Press Association's a company independent to all newspapers who are effectively we use as a wires service. They've got reporters, photographers, video crews like any other news outlet. And they cover the big stories and they send them, and then we cherry pick what we want to add to our stories or not.
So the Mirror Group's contention here is that the story about the Prince Harry drug taking or the broken thumb or the war zone, who cares? We knew all about that without hacking. Is that what he's saying?
It's effectively the case, yeah. And Andrew Green, King's Counsel, as I mentioned, he's the one that's been putting that to Prince Harry, which, you know, he obviously denies, saying that they might well have been in the public domain, but he then claims that journalists went then and tried to improve the stories and get more information.
Can I ask you about the one particular element of attack from Prince Harry? The broadcaster and journalist Piers Morgan has been singled out by Prince Harry, hasn't he? What has been seen?
What has
he said about Piers Morgan?
Well, I mean, the bad blood between these two, you don't have to be an expert to know that these two don't like each other. And Harry, this morning, Harry's statement was released as the court case got going. It's a 55-page document, 25,000 words, and in it, he said he wanted to hold Piers Morgan properly accountable for what he said were unlawful activity towards him and Diana when Piers Morgan was editor at the Mirror. He said, "The thought of Piers Morgan and his band of journalists earwigging into my mother's private and sensitive messages in the same way they have me, and then having given her a nightmare time 3 months prior to her death in Paris makes me feel physically sick and even more determined to hold those responsible, including Morgan, accountable for their vile and entirely unjustified behaviour." Mm-hmm. And he went on to say that he and his wife Megan have been subjected to a barrage of horrific personal attacks and intimidation from Mr. Morgan. He says that's presumably in retaliation, and that he hopes that Morgan will back down.
In a way, that's in microcosm what he's saying against the UK media as a whole, or certainly certain elements of the UK media in terms of their disregard for privacy. I know the irony here, asking a member of the UK media to comment on this, but what has the reaction been today of the UK media to all of this?
I mean, it's been heavily covered in pretty much all of the outlets. You know, we've gone big on it pretty much all day. But I mean, wider than the media, I mean, the public reaction has pretty much been Harry and Meghan are such a polarizing couple that you are either Team Harry or Meghan, or you're absolutely not on their side. And what this court case is going to do is just further polarize that. If you were Team Meghan and Harry before, you're going to be even more Team Meghan and Harry now. And if you weren't Team Meghan and Harry before, then again, you're going to be even less so now. So as with all of these things, the more of these things that come up, the more people take sides.
Is the Telegraph taking a side here, your own paper? Because I see that your headline at the moment is Prince Harry admits his memoir contradicts legal claims.
I mean, that was him sort of having to, that was one line of questioning from Andrew Green today, where he effectively had to say that what he said in his book sort of contradicted what has been said in court today. I mean, mm-hmm. with court cases, we don't take sides. You can only report on what is said in court. So we're just going straight down the line on this one.
Okay, look, Gareth Davies, acting editor of the Telegraph. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the program. I'm going to save listener your text for Greg Allen. I must say, we'll talk to him about the merger of PGA, the PGA Tour, and LIV Golf a little bit later on, because I think you make a very interesting point. So Phil Mickelson pockets 200 million and gets to play. Handy work if you can get it. Goes on to make the point that Rory McIlroy missed out on a handy 400 million. Maybe so, but I think Rory is mentioning integrity more than dollars. In a lot of sports, as listener, ethics takes a place much lower than money. And that's from M in Galway. And finally, in terms of TV programmes you watch and watch and watch again, Murray says, I love Heartbeat. None of this privacy nonsense, and they catch the culprit, says Murray. Well, they do indeed. Can we talk about your children's eye care? Because eye care for children is a postcode lottery. So say Optometry Ireland, who today have said they could provide a universal scheme for everyone over the age of 8 without additional staffing. For more on this, I'm joined by John Weldon, who's spokesperson with Optometry Ireland and is an optometrist as well, of course. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Focus, Mila Cormac, Trunamala. How are you?
Gamagar, Mila Magath. Why is everyone's children's eye care, according to you, a postcode lottery?
Well, unfortunately, Cormac, all across the country, there are haphazard and ad hoc schemes put into place to deliver care for this important group of people. Our difficulty is that we think it's a national issue. We recognise that the Constitution and various parts of legislation provide that the state give eye examination and provision for appliances, and that hasn't been happening.
So let's go back to square one. Why isn't it happening? Is it down to resources in some counties more than others?
Well, there are several reasons. Of course, resources and recruitment are a big issue. But if you think about the pathway for these children, Cormac, normally the National School Screening Programme in years gone before was very effective, where usually a public health nurse would attend in junior and senior infants and do screening tests for eye abnormalities and teeth, and you'd have your BCG and your polio, etc. Back in 2009, when the big recession hit us, many of those PHNs took early retirement and they've not since been replaced. So the screening system has at best become very haphazard.
And the consequences then are devastating, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And when you accept the international statistics that about a quarter, 25% of children of primary school age have some sort of visual disorder that requires intervention, if they're not being seen and picked up, then that has a negative impact on them for both academic success and, of course, their life and career opportunities later on.
And in terms of their eyes, firstly, what kind of issues do you see?
Well, I suppose the three big issues that we're focusing on, if you forgive the pun, are first of all myopia or short-sightedness. We know that there is an increasing cohort of young people developing short-sightedness, and everyone knows what it's like to not be able to see the board in class or focus on your work. And if you're the unfortunate child at the back, you're disadvantaged straight away. Mm-hmm. The second area that we're concerned about is called amblyopia, or commonly called a lazy eye. And this, when it's picked up at a young enough age, Cormac, can be successfully managed and treated. Unfortunately, if it's not picked up in time and treated in a timely fashion, it will develop poor sight and therefore eliminate that young person from certain careers like joining the guards or driving a bus or train or flying an aircraft.
Third
thing on top of that.
Sorry, yeah, yes, go on, yeah.
Carry on.
No, sorry.
The third element of it as well Cormac, is a squint. So that's where one eye turns in and needs surgical intervention. So if that's not picked up and referred in a timely fashion and operated on in a timely fashion, then that patient is deprived of developmental sight. And we know already that ophthalmology is one of the longest surgical waiting lists in the country.
Yeah, indeed. Sorry for cutting across you there. It's quite clear, academic and social restrictions and sporting restrictions as well, I'm sure. If you don't get these issues sorted early on, is there a solution to all of this, John?
Well, the solution is staring us right in the face. You know, Optometry Ireland has over 700 members who are very highly qualified and trained, regulated as healthcare professionals by Carew, in over 350 locations locally and easily accessible to all parents and children. We have the skills, we have the equipment, we have the personnel. All we need is the willpower from the government and the resources.
How much would it cost?
Well, in actual fact, previous research has shown that to deliver the care in a community setting with your local optometrist is cheaper than to do so in a hospital or tertiary care setting.
Yeah, but how much would it cost? Are you saying that would save the system in the long run as well? But how much would it cost to roll out initially?
Yeah, so the money is already there, Cormac. You know, it's just being allocated in the wrong way, in the wrong places. And the difficulty for us is when we measure it in purely economic terms, we're somewhat missing the mark. First of all, the primary thing with our sight is it's a quality of life issue. As a professional, but also as a parent, I think about the lads on the hurling field. If they're not able to track the slither, what happens to their quality of life? We know how a child who is out of school for a short period of time, and we recognise this through COVID, if they can't see what they're up to, how far behind do they fall in such a quick and short time?
The consequences can be devastating, as I say, in terms of the development. But can I ask you briefly and finally here, John, are we dealing with a turf war then, that the resources for this is going to the hospital system and you're saying it's not the best way to spend that money, give it to the optometrists locally, is that it?
Well, I believe we're celebrating a great centenary of great anniversaries for our country. We are a nation. We believe that this should be dealt with at a national level.
Okay, look, we'll see what they say in terms of a response. John Weldon, spokesperson with Optometry Ireland and an optometrist. Thank you very much indeed. 51551.
Believe together this summer as the women's national team make history in Australia. And now with Sky VIP, all Sky customers can win amazing experiences, including a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Australia to meet the team and soak up the incredible atmosphere down under. It's just one of many unforgettable experiences up for grabs with Sky VIP. Enter now on your MySky app. Applicants entered into ballot. Dates and availability vary. See MySky app for full VIP terms.
Irish sun doesn't really count, right?
Look, we all deserve a bit of sun.
Skin cancer is the most common cancer in Ireland. So whether you're at home or abroad, protect your skin by following these sun smart steps. Slip into long loose clothes, slop on the sunscreen, slap on a sun hat, seek shade. Yeah, even on the cloudy days. Oh, and slide on the sunglasses.
I do have very funky sunglasses.
And I do love this hat.
Be SunSmart from the HSE and Healthy Ireland.
We spend much of our lives waiting. Waiting for someone to talk to.
Thank you for holding.
Waiting in line.
Next!
And waiting for the sun to shine. But if you're holding on for the right EV, your wait is over. Because the Kia EV6 is now waiting for you at your local Kia dealer. A triumph of design, space and range, the award-winning EV6 is the car that changes everything. So what are you waiting for? Visit kia.com to book your test drive.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. Do you remember this? And what about this one? Or maybe this one is on again. Ah, you'd watch them all again, wouldn't you? It seems we're re-watching our old favourites on TV more and more. But why are we re-watching things we've seen before on television? Well, joining us now is Des Grufferty, the Des Grufferty from Gogglebox. Des, you're very welcome to the programme.
My God, man, there's an intro. How are you,
Carl? Not too bad. Good to talk to you, Des. Come here to me. I'm one of them. You're one of them that keeps re-watching programmes. What are you watching?
Okay, I tell you, I kind of was half thinking about this, when I really thought back to it, like, I even watched the, remember the Tales of the Unexpected? Yeah. Remember they used to have Roald Dahl doing the narration at the very start?
Yeah.
I actually watched that only kind of lately, and that does be on up and down.
Yeah.
with the fast show as well, which I thought was a very, brilliant. Very funny show.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's gone out of my head. I literally had to.
You rewatch Fawlty Towers about a million times, I think, do you? Is what I'm told.
100%. It's still so funny. And even on TikTok, a lot of it actually comes up on TikTok and stuff like that. So it's coming at you from all angles.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I think it brings you back to, I won't say happier times, but different times, let's call it.
Are you serious? So there's a bit of nostalgia, is that it?
100%. Like, even with my movies, music, things like that. I know they're running, Never Mind the Buzzcocks even at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just not the same back in the day when Mark Lamar, Phil Jupitus, and our own Sean Hughes, who has now passed, used to be part of the panels on it.
It's never the same, though, is it, when you watch it back? What about your lovely family, Des? Are they ever sick of Daddy watching the same stuff again?
Well, to be honest with you, with Danielle and Georgina, and I know Georgina is only a recent comer to Gogglebox Couch, so she is. But they watch Friends, and they watch the old Seinfeld.
Oh, my God.
You know, they absolutely adore it.
Yeah, that's actually, I didn't know we had 12-year-old listeners on this program, but we apparently do. And he was saying, he or she was saying, they watch Frasier again and again because they like the humour of witches. And some of these programmes, Des, maybe people keep re-watching them because they stand the test of time, their quality.
100%. And I'm just going to say this. They're a little bit politically incorrect.
Are they?
You know, in my opinion, like some of the things that they've done on Fawlty Towers and things like that, completely and utterly, you know me. And everyone knows what I'm talking about. So, you know, it was a less, how will I say, policed time.
Yeah, a less enlightened time. Do you ever cringe when you watch those programmes?
There'll be sometimes, you know, some of the things that they did, I would cringe. Like, yeah. You know, that's
they wouldn't get away with those jokes, I suppose, now. Britain, I think, have apologised for jokes that they've done. Jim texts us. You might agree with Jim, Des, at 51551. He says, the default repeat for most men, now, you and I think, fall into this category, is only fools and horses. Only fools and horses. Can't get enough of what he says.
100%. Absolutely. Like, I mean, what brilliant TV. I'm sorry, but they can't make it like that now. I'm sorry, but they can't.
Hang on a second. There's an accusation. You're saying they're not as good now.
No, they can't. And everything has to be watched. The P's and Q's has to be watched. And I'm sorry, it's to the detriment of what's happened on TV. The nearest thing that I can bring it to is the like of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to the most up-to-date type of thing. And we watched, myself and Laura watched The Crown as well. We never watched it before, but we kind of both watched it over COVID.
Do you have arguments, Des, as to what to watch? New or old?
Laura kills me stone dead. She says, you cannot watch another World War II movie. You've seen it 1,000 times. From the Battle of the Bulge, The Great Escape, Escape the Victory, The Heroes of Telemark,
and come here to
the
me.
Eagle has landed.
Come here to me. Educate us, Des. Educate us in terms of couch warfare. How do you win that argument?
Well, you see, I'm lucky enough, I cook really well. So if I promise her something nice to eat.
Okay, well, look, with that great advice, Des, we'll let you go. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That is Des Grufferty from Gogglebox. The listener says the reason we watch repeats is that TV companies are not giving us many new programmes. You can text us to 51551.